Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Joshua Bardavid, attorney for Mr. Wang. A notice to appear becomes a notice to appear when the seven requirements contained in Section 239 of the Immigration and Nationality Act are met. Whether those requirements are met in one document or two, service of a notice to appear has not occurred until those seven requirements have been met.
Really?
Yes, Your Honor.
All seven have to be met before it counts at all?
That's correct, Your Honor. The language of the statute is clear and unambiguous. It says...
It is?
The immigration, it says the notice to appear shall contain, and then lists seven, in plain language, seven requirements.
The date and time. That's a slightly different question. And of course, as you well know, you are swimming against what the Board of Immigration Appeals has said about this. They've said the notice to appear is notice that somebody is trying to remove you from the United States, and particularly something like the date and time of the initial hearing, which is not even under the control of the agency that serves the notice, is something that can be furnished later.
Yes, I understand that the board stated that, and in the first instance, we would assert that because the language of INA Section 239 is entirely clear and unambiguous, Chevron deference...
It is not.
Okay.
It says these things are supposed to be in here. It does not say the notice is not effective for these purposes until all seven of those things have been resolved. It contemplates changes in the time and place of the scheduled hearing, etc. So why is the Board of Immigration Appeals interpretation in the... Camarillo. Why is that an unreasonable interpretation?
Well, Your Honor, it's unreasonable because the board in Camarillo leaves open, and they don't answer, actually, this question. There's two possible interpretations of Camarillo, and the board actually seems to imply both. On page 247 of Camarillo, the board seems to say that there, none of the requirements contained in INA Section 239 need to be included. Merely if the document is entitled Notice to Appear, that would be sufficient for the stop time rule. And the exact quote is, they say, Section 240A merely specifies the document the DHS must serve on the alien to trigger the stop time rule and does not impose substantive requirements for a notice to appear to be effective.
But let's look at this Camarillo decision as a whole, and also against the backdrop of other regulations. Later on, and you were probably getting to this, they say at least the continuous presence ends on the service of a notice, even if the notice doesn't include the date and time. Well, that actually happens to be our case as well. At a broader level, certainly the immigration regulations as a whole have what I'll just call due process-like protections in them. And it seems to me that if we were to encounter a case someday where a notice to appear was so deficient that it didn't comply with adequate notice, then you would say, well, it just doesn't have enough to alert the recipient of what's going on. And that would be quite a different case from the one we have now, one that we don't need to reach today, I don't think. But this is exactly Camarillo, isn't it? This is a date and time.
Yes, Your Honor, this is Camarillo. But the reason that I raised this is because then if we move to the second possibility, which the board is implying, which is that they're limiting their decision only to where the notice to appear does not include the date and time, in that instance, we don't have to get to due process because we have a statute. And the statute doesn't differentiate in the seven requirements of importance. Congress said these are the seven things that need to be provided. It doesn't say that five are shall be provided and two are aspirational. It says all seven shall be provided.
And sooner or later, that does happen, but we are talking about what breaks the continuous presence rule. And the statute doesn't have a word about it, about the continuous presence rule. All the statute is doing is defining what has to be in a notice to appear. So I think we need to be careful about blending the two.
I'm also troubled here by the facts in this case. Under your theory, in essence, the government failed to invoke the stop time rule by failing to serve a second complete notice to appear.
Yes, sir.
The reason that didn't happen, apparently, is because your client bonded out and disappeared, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, why should that be rewarded?
We're not asking for it to be rewarded, Your Honor. Well, this is an issue that could have been raised and was waived by the department at the time when he failed to appear for his hearing. On page 80 of the record, he failed to appear in 1999, and the department said, rather than seeking an in absentia order of removal for his alleged disappearance, it acknowledged that it needed to find his correct address. The problem being that the first notice was mailed via FedEx to a detention facility, which does not accept Federal Express. And then the second notice, as Mr. Wang asserts, was mailed to an address which he did not provide. And seemingly, the government agreed that he didn't provide it because they specifically say that they need time to ascertain his correct address.
The only address they had for him. Where did it come from?
Mr. Wang asserts that it was, in fact, provided by a smuggler. That's contained on page 177-78 of the record. The department doesn't raise this issue and could have raised this issue and certainly could have sought an in absentia order of removal at that 1999 hearing, but they chose not to.
Well, but why punish them? I mean, the thing that this case looks like to me, frankly, is Mr. Wang shows up, he doesn't return after he bonds out, then he goes off and he waits out the 10 years. And then he comes back and he wants to take advantage of 10 years continuous presence in the United States. And that strikes me as quite against the public policy of the immigration system.
Your Honor, there's no indication that that was Mr. Wang's intent. In fact, he sought to recalendar proceedings, as was his right, based upon him seeking a U visa at the time as a victim of a crime.
Once he's safe, he kind of resurfaces. Yes, I understand about the U visa. I understand, we have U visa cases. But I'm not going to do too much with this observation except to say that once somebody has already been through the notice to appear process, has begun that process, then it seems to me perfectly rational for the Board of Immigration Appeals to say, whatever else happens to you, you're not going to get the benefit of the continuous presence rule. Maybe you get something else. Maybe you get U visa. Maybe you get, near relative. Maybe you get other things. But continuous presence, no.
You know, this would go to the public policy point of that instituting proceedings is the stop time in order to prevent aliens from then using delays and continuances and things like that in order to then become eligible, that once proceedings have been instituted.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Congress said in order to institute proceedings, these are the seven requirements, and two of which weren't provided. And the issue being that it's not just simply at a date and time to be determined at some potential theoretical later date. And I have seen instances where a notice to appear is served on an alien but not actually filed in the immigration court for a decade, for 5, 6, 7 years. All of that is within the control of the government. The government has the ability to stop time. Once they do, I can see that at that point, the person can no longer accumulate additional time for cancellation purposes. But because all of these things, the seven requirements, are within the power of the government to meet, and the government did not meet those requirements here, we cannot hold Mr. Wang to the stop time rule until they properly provided him notice in accordance with the statute, all seven requirements. And, Your Honor, just to go back to your point about this being two statutes and we have to avoid, looking at one as a requirement for the other, in fact, 240 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, which is the stop time provision, specifically says that stop time, the accumulation of lawful presence or unlawful presence in the United States stops upon the service of the notice to appear in accordance with INA Section 239A. Therefore, they're by explicit reference incorporating the seven requirements contained in Section 239A. Unless the court has any further questions, I'll reserve the remaining time.
One quick question about your continuance argument.
Your Honor, we're going to rest on our brief for the continuance argument, unless you have a specific question.
I'll drop it then.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, fine. Ms. Parascandola, is that close?
Yes, Your Honor, it's exactly as it's spelled. May it please the court, Christina Parascandola for the Attorney General. The issue here is whether the board's interpretation was permissible, namely when an alien is served with a notice to appear that does not contain the date and time of the initial hearing, whether the alien's the alien's continuous physical presence ends with the service of the notice to appear, as long as the alien is notified later of the date and time of the hearing.
So as you understand the board's position, how defective can this notice to appear be under Camarillo or anything else? Can it spell his name wrong? Can it, you know, fail to reach him? I mean, what?
Your Honor, the issue, I think the important thing here is that the alien is provided notice that he is in removal proceedings. And under this court's precedence, under the first, fourth, eighth, every court that has examined the issue, the notice to appear need not contain the date and time of the hearing.
But in Dababne, everything did reach the person by the time of the hearing, by the time of the 10 years.
Yes, Your Honor. So the question you're asking is, must the alien receive all of that information before he accrues 10 years physical presence?
Right. I mean, because, look, I mean, if you get it in one piece of paper or two or three pieces of paper, I can certainly see, and that's what Dababne says, that really is of no moment because you've gotten all the notice you needed to have. But that's not the Camarillo situation, not this one.
Yes, Your Honor. This case is factually distinguishable from Dababne. And I think your question gets to where the ambiguity is. When the alien receives the notice in more than one piece of paper, when does the alien's continuous physical presence end for purposes of the stop time rule? Does it relate back to the service of the notice to appear, or does it happen at some point later? And in Dababne, this court did not reach the issue because there was no need to. Mr. Dababne was served with the notice to appear and received a subsequent notice of the date and time of his hearing within 10 years.
Let me ask you this. Suppose a proceeding is instituted on the basis of a defective notice to appear. Can the alien move to dismiss it based on that? I mean, just as somebody who receives defective service of process in federal court is entitled to file a motion under Rule 12B, asserting that service of process was defective, and that's a motion, if granted, that gets rid of the case.
Yes, Your Honor. The alien certainly can file the motion. We would have to look to precedent as to, you know, what would make it defective. I know that in the Dababne case, for example, that the petitioner did, that was mainly about the petitioner challenging the service of the notice to appear.
So if the case were then dismissed, though, then is it your position it stops the accrual of time anyway, or if the case were dismissed, would continuous time in the country continue to accrue?
Your Honor, I'm not sure because, you know, we're not reaching that in this case. It wasn't reached in Camarillo. I would say that once the alien receives the notice to appear, he or she is on notice that removal proceedings have been initiated. So I would, you know, today say that, yes, that would end the alien's continuous physical presence for purposes of the stop time rule.
If I recall correctly, 8 U.S.C. 1229A, at least the way I counted it, actually is about 14 different elements, A1. But and one of them, and I'm doing this from memory, I apologize, is in essence you have to specify, the government has to specify the grounds for removal. What's the legal basis? Can that be amended?
Yes, Your Honor, it can be amended under the board's precedential decision in Camarillo.
And what if it's missing?
I've never seen that situation before.
This is a variation on Chief Judge Wood's question, in essence.
Yes.
How bad can it be? The petitioner is given this the extreme case. Let's say it just says notice to appear, INS, alien thus and such a name, A number, and that's it.
Your Honor, since you're asking me a hypothetical question, if mm-hmm. I were hypothetically representing an alien, I would definitely challenge that. Mm-hmm. And but that's not the case here. Mr. Wang was on notice that he was in removal proceedings and what the charge was against him. Now, the government can later amend that charge. Sometimes information becomes available regarding a criminal conviction or another ground may arise, and it is certainly the Department of Homeland Security's prerogative to amend that charging document. Mm-hmm. So, and I would argue that insofar as Dabhabne can be read as requiring service of a notice to appear and a notice of hearing containing the date and time of the hearing within 10 years, that's really dicta. It wasn't central to the court's decision in that case. Also, I'd just like to address briefly the immigration judge's denial of a continuance to Mr. Wang. In this case, obviously, Mr. Wang basically disappeared for 10 years. He did seek to recalendar his proceedings, so he did come before the court. However, he had asked for and received a continuance in order to apply for a U visa a second time after the first petition was denied. He represented to the immigration judge that he was applying for a U visa and that also he was contemplating applying for asylum. And the immigration judge, based on these representations, granted Mr. Wang a 20-month continuance. And also, the immigration judge instructed Mr. Wang that he was not eligible for cancellation of removal. When Mr. Wang finally appeared before the immigration judge after 20 months, he presented an application for cancellation of removal. He presented no asylum application. And he said that he had not applied for a second U visa.
Of course, asylum would have been almost pointless, right? I mean, given the one-year rule for asylum applications.
Your Honor, we don't know because these facts have not been developed in the record. As you probably are aware, the one-year rule, that there are exceptions to that.
Which the department always argues vigorously against.
At least in the cases we see.
Okay, the court doesn't have jurisdiction. Absolutely. But Mr. Wang, certainly, I mean, he had an account of being smuggled and being, held hostage by kidnappers in New York. We don't know. We don't know what he could have had ineffective assistance of counsel. There are
another
myriad of reasons.
Theory that never actually, in my experience, works. But, yes, I mean, he could have done lots of things. I understand that he didn't, even after the 20 months. Perhaps the most troublesome is that he didn't reapply for the U visa, because I can imagine a situation with a U visa application where upon the first effort, the local law enforcement authorities or others might not be in a position to support the visa in the appropriate way, and maybe some later time the facts would have changed.
Yes, Your Honor, but again, the record lacks any indication that Mr. Wang even contacted law enforcement authorities. I think his counsel said we couldn't get a letter, and that's it. And there's nothing about a criminal case, there's nothing to go on. And just to get back to the asylum issue, Mr. Wang could have applied for withholding of removal and protection under the Torture Convention, which don't have time limits. I could see that I'm running out of time. Are there no further questions from the court?
Apparently not, so thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Bardavid?
The government is relying on the fact that Mr. Wang was supposedly given notice that the government was seeking to remove him. But we have what Congress deemed sufficient in order to provide an alien notice that the government is seeking to remove him, and two of those requirements were not met until the 10 years had accrued.
How did that incompleteness prejudice him?
It prejudiced him because he's being provided notice that at some theoretical date in the future, the government will commence those proceedings. And this is an important part to understand the difference between providing notice to appear and actually commencing the proceedings. Serving the notice to appear does not commence proceedings in immigration court. Filing the notice to appear commences the proceedings in terms of removing an individual. So simply serving an individual with a notice to appear, saying at some point we don't know when, at some point in the future, we will call you before a judge. Congress specifically said that is not sufficient. Congress says until you tell the person to actually go before a judge, he or she has not been provided with sufficient notice that the government seeks to remove him. The board simply picking and choosing which requirements really are requirements and which are aspirational is insufficient to meet the requirements under the statute. Unless the court has any further questions, we'll rest on the brief. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.